And now, it's time for our weekly news round. Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The Dead Sea Scrolls have fascinated scholars and historians since the ancient texts were found around 70 years ago, scattered within a series of caves in the West Bank. Eshbel Ratson and Jonathan Ben-Dov from the University of Haifa's Bible Studies Department found the pieces all fit together after they started examining them just under a year ago. Some of the fragments they had to decipher were smaller than 1 square centimetre, or 1/2 inch squared. They put it all together and said it was actually one scroll, said Leanne Yavelberg, a university spokesman. A Haifa University statement said that Ratson and Ben-Dov were now working on deciphering the last remaining scroll. Many experts believe the manuscripts of the Dead Sea were written by the celibate Essenes, a dissident Jewish sect that had retreated into the Judean desert around Qumran and its caves. The theory says the groups either wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls or were caretakers of the legal, philosophical, and religious document. The latest deciphered scroll contains references to the 364-day calendar used by the sect, as opposed to the lunar calendar used in Jewish religious practice today. The scroll also identifies the name of a festival that celebrates the changing of the seasons. The festivals included new wheat, new wine, and new oil, which are related to the Jewish festival Shavuot and no longer observed in Judaism. Researchers also identified a festival observed 4 times a year called Tekefah, which means period in modern-day Hebrew and marks the transition between the seasons. The parchment and papyrus scrolls contain Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic writing and include several of the earliest known texts from the Bible, including the oldest surviving copy of the Ten Commandments. A Chinese court in the southwestern province of Yunnan sent 6 Protestant Christians to prison last week for their membership of an evil cult. The verdict comes as part of a provincial crackdown on cults as the ruling Communist Party continues its national campaign to restrict unregistered churches before new religious regulations come into force next week. The 6 Christians received long sentences of up to 13 years by a court in Linkang City, West Yunnan, which found them guilty of being part of a sect called the Three Grades of Servants and of using an evil cult to organize to undermine law enforcement, lawyer Zhao Yunyang told Radio Free Asia. According to Release International, since 2016, China has used its campaign against the sect as a pretext to round up about 200 Christians across Yunnan. Some Christians have already been convicted, while others are awaiting trial. The Church of England is set to lobby the government over a rising number of Down syndrome abortions. Church leaders raise concerns that a growing number of parents who discover their child will be born with the condition are choosing to terminate the pregnancy, a pattern which could see it wiped out completely. Its governing body will debate a call to regulate providers of non-invasive prenatal testing, a relatively new test for the condition, which carries no risk of miscarriage, unlike older procedures such as amniocentesis. The church said women should be provided with comprehensive, unbiased information by doctors and test providers. In a document entitled Valuing People with Down Syndrome, set to be debated at next month's General Synod, the church warned that the test has the potential to lead to major reductions of Down Syndrome live births. In countries such as Iceland and Denmark, which have almost universal screening and close to 100% termination rates, there is a real possibility that people with Down syndrome will effectively disappear from their populations, it added. Speaking at a press briefing, Brendan McCarthy, the church's national advisor on medical ethics and social policy, said he had found unregulated websites offering to test a blood sample for a few £100 with no context or information about the prospect for someone with Down syndrome. He said the provision of neutral information reflected NHS best practice, but the anecdotal evidence suggested some doctors were presenting a diagnosis as bad news and immediately initiating conversations about termination, which could put parents under pressure. Pointing to figures showing an increase in abortions due to Down syndrome, he said that in 2010 there were 482 terminations of pregnancy because of a diagnosis of the condition. In 2016, there were 706. During the same period, there was a fall of 6,000 in terms of overall terminations. Our hope and our belief is that when people are given the full information and they're given it in a neutral way, then the Icelandic or the Danish experience is not an inevitability, he said. However, Jane Fisher, Director of Advisory Charity Antenatal Results and Choices, said she thought the proposal was patronising. In our experience, women and couples do everything they can to investigate what that diagnosis would mean, and they base their decisions on accurate information. There's been a lot of this messaging over the last year or so, which makes women and couples feel an extra level of distress, she said. It kind of denies their agency to say that they just do what their health professionals tell them. Dawn McAvoy, co-founder of pro-life group Both Lives Matter, welcomed the announcement. Undoubtedly, there has been a silence on the Protestant denominations more than the Roman Catholic Church, so we would welcome any statement that would advocate the humanity of the pre-born child and value their life, she said. A church in Paris has introduced a contactless card payment system to collect Sunday Mass donations. 5 new wicker baskets equipped with a smartphone and contactless payment terminal will now be passed around the pews of St. François de Moliteur during Mass. While churchgoers will still be able to toss money into traditional baskets wrapped with coins, donors will no longer need to carry cash. The church's collections have stagnated in recent years, averaging at €3 per donation. But the diocese insists that the development is not about making money. Father Didier Duverne, the parish priest, said, "The experiment is not to increase the amount of donations, but to anticipate the future, when people don't carry money anymore, even for their baguette," he said. "It amuses me, it's fun. Our parishioners are receptive of the novelty." The high-tech baskets, which have a traditional appearance, give people the option to donate €2, €3, €5, or even €10. The city's diocese suggests that donations make up 79% of the church's resources and are spent on upkeep costs such as heating and electricity. Christophe Rosselot, the Director of Financial Resources Development in the Diocese of Paris, said the church has no reason not to get on with the times. The contactless payment baskets are not the first attempt to introduce technology to France's Catholic churches. A smartphone app called La Quête, which translates as The Collection, was introduced in 2016 and has since been used in more than 2,000 parishes across 28 dioceses in France. Over the last 14 months, about 4,000 donations have been made across 8 Paris parishes where the app has been tested. The average amount spent is €4.71. A significant number of England's 42 historic Anglican cathedrals are at severe financial risk, and some have ineffective and under-resourced management, an investigation set up by the Archbishops of Canterbury and York has found. The Church of England should begin discussions with the government about the possibility of state funding for the country's most venerated ancient buildings, it recommended. Cathedrals, which attract more than 10 million visitors a year, face spiralling costs of running, repairing and maintaining their buildings. 9 charge an entrance fee, with the remainder relying on donations, legacies, endowments, grants, and increasingly income from commercial events. The cathedral's working group, led by Adrian Newman, the Bishop of Stepney, spent 7 months reviewing the institution's governance and financial management. Its report highlights vulnerabilities and weaknesses across the sector, and a confusion of governance and management that has increased both operational and financial risks. In a preface to the draft report, Newman said, "In many ways, cathedrals are one of the church's success stories, bucking the trends of numerical decline, exerting a growing influence in civil society, and demonstrating an effective way of engaging with contemporary culture." But, it continued, "crises last year at Peterborough and Exeter cathedrals exposed serious fault lines in their cathedrals and raised important questions about the structures by which cathedrals are governed. A large number were under significant financial pressure." The report recommended cathedrals hire chief financial officers with high-level expertise, review their funding, produce regular accounts, and limit debt. It also criticised the governance of cathedrals. Governing bodies known as chapters were often under-resourced and members have too little training, the report said. There is also a need for penitence for those occasions when relationships between cathedral and diocese, bishop and dean, have broken down, said Newman in the preface. In seeking a balance between codes of practice, guidelines and church legislation, the working group acknowledged no amount of legislation can solve the problems of dysfunctional relationships. The report recommended that chapters should continue to be cathedral's governing body, but separate and strengthened management structures should oversee day-to-day operations. On safeguarding, the report said cathedrals were lagging behind the rest of the church in protecting young and vulnerable people from abuse. Launching the report for consultation between now and the end of February, Newman said cathedrals were inspirational in their impact on our national life and on the lives of millions of worshippers and visitors each year. He added, "In proposing changes to governance structures and aspects of cathedral operations, we do not wish to inhibit the entrepreneurial flair that has characterized so much that is good about the world of cathedrals, nor impose unnecessary red tape. However, we are committed to ensure that cathedrals do not get into situations which prevent them from thriving in their role as pioneers in mission and ministry." Adrian Dauber, the chair of the Association of English Cathedrals and Dean of Lichfield, said, "Our cathedrals have been here for hundreds of years, vibrant seats of mission, of learning, of heritage, and of love. Let's ensure they are here for hundreds more." A new survey has revealed that one in four non-believers pray when confronted by tough times, despite insisting they are not religious. For atheists and agnostics, personal crises or tragedy is the most common reason for them to resort to prayer, with a quarter admitting they pray for comfort or to feel less lonely. Church attendance in Great Britain dropped from 6.5 million to just over 3 million between 1980 and 2015, according to the website Faith Survey. However, more than half of all adults in the UK pray regularly, despite only one in three praying in a place of worship, according to a poll carried out by ComRes on behalf of the Christian aid agency Tear Fund. A third of people pray in the morning or before they go to sleep. People are also increasingly likely to solicit support from God while cooking or exercising. And one in five pray while doing household chores, while 15% pray while they commute. However, of those who pray, less than half think God actually hears them, a slim majority. Of the varied subjects of prayers, family tops the list. More than 70% of prayers mention family. A strong 42% of prayers thank God, while 40% asked for healing and another 40% included mention of friends. We should not be surprised by these recent findings, which reflect human longing for the mystery and love of God amid experiences of daily life, said Rachel Truick, Bishop of Gloucester, to The Guardian. Chaplain to the Archbishop of Canterbury, Isabel Hamley, said, "Prayer is primarily a line of communication with God, thinking, reflecting, bringing one's concerns and worries into a bigger picture." Ruth Valerio of Tear Fund suggested prayer was still important to the lives of people in the UK. She said, "While it is often easier to pray for issues closer to home, we want to encourage people to continue to engage with global issues and pray for an end to extreme poverty." A leather-bound 400-year-old Welsh Bible that survived a French invasion, fires, and even being used as toilet paper was discovered gathering dust in the back of a church after four centuries. The leather-bound 620 Hloanda Bible, which understood the last invasion on British soil in 1797, defied the odds and will now go on public show at the National Library of Wales. The Bible was already nearly 200 years old when enemy invaders landed on shores in Hloanda, Pembrokeshire, West Wales, while George III was still on the throne, before raiding buildings and burning all in their path. The army of 1,400 French and Irish troops smashed up pews in St. Gwyndaf's Church in Hloanda and used pages from the Bible to start a fire. The Hloanda Bible was then abandoned until being found again in the 1990s. Vicar of the church, Reverend Sarah Geach, said, "The story goes that the book was rediscovered at the back of the church in the 1990s, and nobody realized what it was. The parish made a cabinet, but of course they were not able to store it under the right conditions, and over a period of time it started to deteriorate. The Bible was handed over to conservators at the University of Wales Trinity St. David's in Lampeter West Wales 2 years ago. It was placed in a special strong room with temperatures set at 15 degrees centigrade and humidity levels at 60% to revitalise it. It will next month be moved to the National Library of Wales in Aberystwyth. Retired lecturer Dr. John Morgan Guy said, "What makes it unique is its association with the last invasion on British soil all those years ago. It did well to survive when you consider what it must have been through. Expert analysis of the Bible suggests these soldiers grabbed it by the hard cover and tore the bindings, which are made of wood and thick, strong string, from the paper with considerable force. They then ripped handfuls of sheet from the Bibles and used them to start a fire outside so they could cook food and keep warm. Alas, some of the sheets were also used for more basic purposes by the soldiers. Eventually, the Bible will be returned to St. Gwyndaf's, where it will be on display inside a temperature and humidity controlled glass cabinet." A vicar is offering brides a £100 bonus if they turn up for their wedding on time. The Reverend John Corbin of Holy Cross Church in Bearsted, Kent, said arriving late kept helpers waiting unnecessarily. His intervention flies in the face of the tradition that a bride cuts it fine when arriving for their wedding, keeping the groom on tenterhooks at the altar. The Reverend Corbin said he was inspired to take action after a number of recent late arrivals which delayed weddings by 20 minutes or more. He said, "When you're talking about a bride being 20 minutes late, that's half the time of the wedding ceremony. You can have up to 24 people working at the church waiting for that time. How would they react if I was 20 minutes late?" The vicar, who is also in charge of St. Mary the Virgin Church in Thurnham, Kent, said the £100 bonus is also on offer, said that up to 25 people working at the church were affected by a bride turning up late. He told the Kent Messenger newspaper that bell ringers, vergers, choristers and the organist, as well as himself, were often kept waiting. The Reverend said the £100 would be shared among church workers as overtime if the bride failed to turn up on time. The vicar, who was made an honorary canon last year, said, "I wanted to show that I was taking my staff seriously because they aren't doing it for the money. Hopefully, it has had the desired effect, but it was really more about showing that I was taking my staff seriously and as an expression of my concern." Local Nick Spence of Maidstone said, "If it gets the bride to the church on time, then it's a great idea, and she gets a nice £100 bonus just for turning up on time." Another local, Claire Richards, however, disagreed, saying it was a tradition for a bride to be late. She said, "It's a well-worn tradition for a bride to be late for a wedding, and the church should be prepared for it. It's not like churches have 10 weddings a day. The day is for the bride and groom to say their vows before God, not to rush around trying to get a £100 bonus." And finally, a New Hampshire man was arrested for biting a police dog while officers were investigating reports of a shooting in the town of Boscawen, police officials said on Tuesday. Two people at the home were wanted on outstanding warrants and tried to flee when police attempted to arrest them, said Lieutenant Jason Killery of the Boscawen Police Department. "Both of them resisted arrest, and one very strongly resisted arrest. He bit the dog bit him. He ended up getting tasered," Killery said. The suspect, who was not identified, was charged with resisting arrest and assault on a police dog. Killery said he'd never heard of an incident in which a human attempted to bite a police dog. "If you get into a biting competition with a police dog, you're not going to win," Killery said. "They're pretty good at that." My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.